This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Councilman with Howard Wilkinson. And again, we're talking today about Kentucky politics. Our guests are Rick Robinson, a lawyer, author, and political analyst who was the legislative director for Republican Jim Bunning, and Nathan Smith, a businessman and political activist from Fort Mitchell, who was a 2008 superdelegate and the vice chair of the Kentucky Democratic Party. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100.
As a superdelegate, did you get like a little shirt with an S on it and a cape? Did they give you – were you like – Did you have to take off your glasses in the phone booth
I go to both conventions, so you guys don't have that kind of.
And you got a corner room at the convention. That was the big deal.
Yeah. We're talking about how Hardy is going after Matt Bevin, whom a month or so ago most Kentuckians had no idea who this person was. Why is he doing this, Rick?
Well, maybe we've talked about this, Rick and I, and I think what may come back later to while McConnell's got all this money, and obviously Rick and I both agree that it could be a $100 million race and where you're going to spend all that money at, he's going after money. But he also is building up Bevins doing this. And, I mean, I didn't even know who Bevins was 30 days ago. And, not that I'm a Republican and a Republican primary voter, but I mean, I do watch politics pretty well and I didn't know who he was, but I know all about the guy now. I know everything, and he has done a nice job explaining to the people. Now, will Bevin be able to, is he a snake oil? I don't know. But,
one of the things that I reflected on as Nathan and I were talking about this, and I really tried to figure out where this was coming from, was that I remember back in the race where Jim Bunning ran against Dan Mangiardo. And the first ad that we put out in classic Jim Bunning style, Jim Bunning wanted to go out and our political advisors told us to go out and immediately hit him in the nose. Several of us disagreed with that decision because the guy had no name ID. But by the first or second ad where we had gone out and hit Mangiardo in the nose, suddenly we upped his name ID. I think that is one of the things that has happened here is that you took a guy who had zero name ID. And, I mean, the day after he announced, I didn't know who he was. And the day after he announced, I got a piece of mail at my house, a four-page, four-color piece telling me who Matt Bevins was by McConnell.
Right.
And so spending a lot of money and suddenly his name ID with primary voters, which was zero the day before, is being upped by, in fact, the McConnell people. Now, I think he feels fine with the traditional Republican voters, but that the voters that are driven by Tea Party issues, and I'm not talking about Tea Party voters, I'm not talking about the people that when you drive down the street, there's a yellow don't tread on me flag hanging from their porch. I'm talking about when you walk up and down the street in Fort Mitchell and three out of four doors that you knock on are going to be sympathetic to the issues being raised by the Tea Party. I think that's where he's not taking any chances, and that's why he's throwing the punches he is early, because I don't think he's taking any chances with that voter.
Well, and Mitch McConnell wants people to learn about Matt Bevin from him, from Mitch McConnell, not from Matt Bevin. I mean, he's defining Matt Bevin for the people of Kentucky, of the Republican primary voters. With pieces like this.
The only thing I say about that, Howard, is I don't know that Matt Bevin would ever be able to raise the money to identify himself. Again, which leaves some of us scratching our head a little bit. But as I went through this, I think probably he's worried about that undercurrent. Nobody in the Rand slide, when Rand Paul won in the primary in particular, saw the turnout coming. Mm-hmm. Nobody. I can guarantee you, everybody said they predicted it are liars. Nobody saw the turnout coming. And I think that's what, if I take a look at that, he's not taking anything to chance. And that's why he's doing what he's doing there with putting so much money. The other thing is, with the money they're raising in this race, I'm saying the over-under for Vegas on this race is $100 million between all the candidates and all the primaries and everything else. You can't spend $100 million in Kentucky in the fall.
Yeah.
You're going to have that much money. You better start spending some of it before the primary and spending it now because, A, you can't spend it all in the fall, and B, with all the ads that are going to be paid for in the fall, it's going to be hard to cut through in the fall.
You agree with that, Nathan?
I do agree with that, and I also agree. What's interesting is what I kind of see this race is this race is this race is fought in Kentucky, and it's won in every other state in the union. I think the fundraising in this the state, you know, you're talking $3 or $4 million as a Democrat being able to be raised. McConnell probably raised $5 or $6, $8 million in Kentucky, maybe, and the rest of it will come from New York, L.A., Boston. And McConnell was more than welcome to go around and say, "Well, Allison's out in San Francisco, L.A., and New York." But you know what's funny about that? That's a hypocrite because he's in L.A., New York, San Francisco. Yeah. He's at the same places because he looks at it. I mean, this is the way this race is going to go. This we just happen to be ground zero.
Well, one
different
of the
houses.
Things,
yeah,
or different. Well, different. Well, maybe some
well,
of the same.
I mean, early on, one of the things they said that Grimes had going for her was that she had a close connection to Bill and Hillary Clinton.
And yeah, so does Anthony Weiner. So, you know, well, look how good that do it.
Okay. We're not going to talk about that race. But no, I mean, in terms of being able to go out and help her raise that kind of money from outside of Kentucky, that's going to be a big help for her.
Yeah, I would expect you'll see Bill and Hillary Clinton in here a lot in Kentucky. I think that you'll see probably more of them in Kentucky than actually out of Kentucky.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that I think that she needs a lot of help outside of Kentucky raising money because they've got the ultimate. You can have me or you can have Darth Vader, Mitch McConnell. I mean, and that's what she's going to go around the United States saying. I mean, me or an obstructionist, me or a right wing nut. I mean, whatever it may be, so I don't actually think that Bill or Hillary Clinton or any prominent Democrat is that big of a draw outside of Kentucky, but it definitely is inside Kentucky. They'll be very helpful.
Rick, Nathan mentioned an ad for Allison Lundergan Grimes with the Brent Spence Bridge. Does McConnell run an ad tying Lundergan Grimes to the Clintons?
You know, I don't know that they're
going to.
Please
do.
I'm sure there's going to be tried to do. I mean, even if Fancy Farm, the Weiner reference was made because the Lundergan family had contributed to the Anthony Weiner mayoral race, and so that was brought up. But then again, it's Fancy Farm, and everybody takes pot shots here and there. No, I think what is going to be more important for McConnell, as opposed to taking shots at Lundergan Grimes, will be setting up this. Your vote is about one vote, and your one vote is which party is going to control the United States Senate.
I do not think that's a winner for him, and I hope he does do it because I don't think that's a winner because I think that John Smith and Susie that live on West Maple Avenue, I think they're thinking about themselves, their pocketbook, and what you've done for me lately. And I think that's outside the schoolhouse. I think we want to sit around and think that that's important. But I think when you go down Main Street America, that is not important to them. I don't think they sit around and think about that all day. I think they think about me. And after they get through thinking about me, they think about their children and they think about their husband and wife. I think
they will tie that all to the policies of one party versus the other as they get ready to go into the fall election. And I think that'll be one of the issues that you see brought up at the end.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Again, 513-419-7100 or talk at WVXU.org if you'd like to email 513-419-7100. We did have an email question. If McConnell loses, is there any chance for Republicans to take the Senate?
No.
Zero.
Okay. And another email question.
I still think it's zero, even if he does win.
No, I don't think so. I think it's
basically they have to make a run. I mean, it's been through. They would have to win Louisiana. They'd have to win Arkansas. I mean, I've seen the numbers. It's pretty difficult, even with him winning.
There was another question. Should Ohio or the rest of the country care who wins McConnell's seat?
Well, again, it goes back to the one vote. A lot of people will be voting. And when I talked about the 5 out of 5 Republican voters, there are people in that five out of five-year Republican voters who may not have liked this or that issue by Mitch McConnell, but they like the first vote that he cast every year. Who's the floor leader?
Yeah.
And are you the majority or the minority floor leader? And the people that are in the traditional Republican category that vote, that's an important vote to them. as you get into the folks who are motivated by the Tea Party issues, as you're motivated by the Tea Party issues, that becomes less, and I think he has to convince them why that's important.
Yeah.
Because he's already got to his 5-5.
Right. And I think you have to then start building on that to convince others why that's important.
I also think what might be interesting in this primary is if you see the South, Jim DeMint, get very involved in this to try to beat McConnell. I also think that you can see that make a case that he's going to try to make a run for McConnell as minority leader. And, you know, and quite frankly, there'd be a lot of people in the Tea Party who would sit around and say, you know what, I'm a purist, and I would prefer to stay a minority than to have a wishy-washy McConnell leadership.
I'm glad you're going to so many Tea Party meetings, Nathan, that you understand all this. I sure don't.
Rick is commenting on my friend, Nathan, the Clintons today, too.
Nathan goes to so many of these Tea Party meetings, and he now has such a good understanding of it. So,
well, I mean, you think there are Republicans in the Senate then who would not cry?
Well, obviously, they're already saying that. I mean,
they're already starting,
one of the great races to really start this with is really Lugar. Because if you think Indiana, everybody consider, you know, and say, you know, this where Rick was at with leadership and stuff. But it was obviously in Indiana just last year. I mean, Lugar was one of the major leaders of the Republican Party in the United States. And in that primary, he got beat and got beat pretty good. And so, do I think
McConnell is not going to get Lugar'd?
I tend to agree with Rick on that, but it sure was fun and interesting.
Could it be a close race in the primary? It may well be because you don't know what the undercurrent of the turnout is going to be for the non-traditional Republican voter. Is he going to get Lugar'd where he gets blown away? No.
No. I also think county elections in Kentucky is helpful for McConnell next year in a primary.
Agreed.
There's been a lot of debate nationally about immigration reform. Does that play any role in the 2014 Senate race in Kentucky?
I don't think so.
Depends on what the House does. Depends on what the House ends up doing, and it could, but I don't see. Again, if I were looking at the issues that are pushing on either side, I wouldn't think that right now be a big one.
Why is it, Rick, that McConnell has had so many close races over the years?
If you look at the differential between Democrat and Republican, mm-hmm. Howard, I wouldn't call them close races.
I would not either, actually.
I mean, because if you look at the differential, Kentucky is still a registered Democratic state.
Yeah.
Although in federal elections they tend to vote Republican, you still have a guy who is in the minority party who every year wins in a Senate race. And he is without a doubt the most dogged political campaigner maybe to ever walk the halls of the United States Senate. I can tell you he is the one up there now. He may be in the lifetime.
But, you know, I do think in Kentucky, he is this 30 years is long enough. I do think that plays well because I was just the other day, I was listening to somebody and said that he was in office before I was born. And I think that there are people that they're like, well, that's – and, you know, and what's interesting is I'm a mid-age male and look around and I never – he was in office before I was even voting.
Really? Mid-age?
Mid-age.
Yeah, wow, you're being generous, Smith. You got to be kidding me. Mid-age.
But, you know, and they look – and he was elected in 1984.
Right.
And I think that that's something that plays to his detriment because he – and then the comment, again, that he goes back to, that I'm sure they'll be played, that he did at the Northern Kentucky Chamber meeting was when he said, I've been on the payroll for all of my life, the government payroll. And I think that that's the kind of thing that in Kentucky does hurt him.
Why – I've never quite understood this. I understand the registration numbers and all that sort of thing, but Kentucky – going blue in state races and on federal level, going red. What's going on there?
It's local issues. I think they push it. I mean, I'll talk a little bit and I'll let Rick give his opinion on it.
Yeah.
But I think Kentucky's very regionalized. I grew up in Eastern Kentucky, mm-hmm. which
I couldn't tell by that actually.
Yeah, no.
I thought you got that down at the Dixie Club down in Erlanger. I'm sorry.
But what you find in Eastern Kentucky, there's two or three things. It's kind of interesting that they go against each other. You find an area that is very pro coal. that becomes, you know, they want less and less EPA rules and this. But then they turn around and, as many people would say, there's somewhat of a mailbox economy that goes on there, that if it wasn't for government assistance, they wouldn't – schools and hospitals and stuff would never be built there. So it's kind of like a yin and yang in eastern Kentucky. Then the triangle is, you know, kind of the triangle. It has its economic issues that force it. And then West Kentucky can be extremely conservative and always has kind of been. They happen to be, you know, as soon as they started turning pretty blue during the early Clinton years, mm-hmm. and traditionally done that, except for Louisville has grown and has become very, very, you know.
I think one of the things that happens in all of these races, Howard, is you take a look at, especially in federal races, traditional Republican versus Democrat turnout models. Democrats tend to turn out in a bit larger numbers for state races. Republicans tend to turn out in larger numbers for federal races. If you look at the numbers, I don't want to oversimplify this, but that's a large, large portion of why Kentucky ends up going Republican in a lot of these races, is because traditional turnout models.
Off-year election does hurt McConnell this year. I think he does. If this was a presidential year, it would be very difficult, I think, for Allison to win. I think it's better with being an off-year election because McConnell has to drive the turnout here.
Let's look. We've got about 3 minutes left here. Well, we got two Kentucky political people in the room. Let's look ahead to the next governor's race, which I think is 2015. Early predictions, early handicapping of that governor's race, Rick?
Well, you know, we have Jamie down in the Commissioner of Agriculture's office, I think, who has taken a very strong
Comer,
look.
Jamie
Comer has taken a look at it. The others that have been taking a look at it from the Republican side have kind of been backing away. And Guthrie took a look, I think, and backed away. I don't know who is going to jump out right now. You know, the golden boy of the Republican Party is Jamie Comer.
He's the Nathan. Only boy in the Republican Party.
What about the Democrats?
Well,
I think
Democrats
there's some
have
walked away.
The Democrats have a very long, deep bench, and the Republicans have a very short bench. So, I mean, and I respect that it's Jamie Comer.
They have more lifetime politicians who are trying to work their way up the political ladder in different from office to
lifetime
office.
Lifetime politicians, a day of 30 years. We're on that today. That's very nice, Rick. And I think you have Crit Llewellyn. I think Jack Conway, the attorney general, whose name recognition is very high. You got Adam Edlin, who's a state auditor, who's done an excellent job. I think you're looking at, there are probably some business people out there that are floating around that's interested. You always have Greg Stumbo, the Speaker of the House. Is he going to do it?
More blood on the ground than at the OK Corral, but it's over.
Very well could be.
Also, real quickly, redistricting, I think, is coming up in a special session. Thoughts on that, Rick?
It will be interesting to see if the Republicans actually came up with a plan,
yes,
that from the standpoint of taking a look at the legality of plans would be very hard to not stand constitutional muster.
Only bank cares about the politicians.
Thank you very much. We've been discussing Kentucky politics with Rick Robinson, a lawyer, author, and political analyst who was the legislative director for Republican Jim Bunning, and Nathan Smith, a businessman and political activist from Fort Mitchell, who was a 2008 superdelegate and the vice chair of the Kentucky Democratic Party. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.